what shines in your business and you're renowned for, and everyone knows you do it really well? What's your standard operating procedures that are just humming along and you could refine? Where are the clunks? If you have clunks in your business, and every business does, what's the human element to that? What tech could solve that clunk? And I think starting from there would be a really great strategy for any of our real estate friends out there.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, it's Sam here. Today we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Harcourts New South Wales and ACT, Katrina Tarrant. With more than 28 years in real estate, she recently supported her son, Lockie Cameron, in his record-breaking fundraising run. And as a frequent contributor to Elite Agent, her insights on leadership and industry trends have been both popular and invaluable. So please welcome Katrina Tarrant.
Hi guys, thanks so much for having me on a beautiful Friday morning here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the podcast. As I said before, I pressed the record button. I've had you on my list for a while, not only because of Lockie's amazing record-breaking feat, but you're a contributor to Elite Agent. We keep running into each other at events and most recently, ARIC. So I might kick off this with asking you for a bit of feedback and some of your takeaways from the big conference.
Yeah, amazing. Had a great time at ARIC. Had a really beautiful vibe about it this year. I don't know how to explain that, but it just felt really good to be there. And I loved it, even though I was a little bit tired because I've had a pretty big month, but it was really great. Like many people I've spoken to recently, Ryan Serhant was just a standout for me. He just brings it. He brings the energy. I've been a long-term admirer of his and watch his shows. I've liked how he's been really vulnerable. I remember way back before he'd met his wife, there was an episode where there's a big storm coming into New York and they shut down the whole city. And he's like, I'm alone. I don't have a friend in this world. What am I doing in my life? And the steps he took after that. So that really resonated with me. So great to have him there in person and copious amounts of notes and lots of takeaways that I actually sent out to my group this morning. Secondly was Chip. Chip said something that resonated with me so deeply. I'm a summer girl. I love everything about summer. I work mostly Sunday mornings, but I spend my Sunday afternoon swimming in Sydney Harbour, falling asleep on the grass, listening to a podcast. It's my way of meditating and getting back to work. And he said, if you're lucky in this lifetime, you may get 80 summers, 80 if you're lucky. And depending on how old you are now, which reflected and resonated with me, you may not have that many left. So what are you doing with them? And even just repeating that now, I get a little bit emotional. So there was wonderful other speakers and great real estate content, don't get me wrong, but they were the two things that really struck a deep chord with me.
Yeah, Chip has a way of doing that, actually. I blame him like 10 years ago for Elite Agent starting. And he did a similar thing at the very end of his talk at ARIC was, you know, that what are you going to commit to, and made everyone go, you know, clench your fist and say yes and yes and yes. And then it only takes one commitment and then you're on the hook, right?
Sure does. That commitment is in my diary for Saturday morning. So it popped up and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember making that commitment. Let's do it. So yeah, I love that. I love actionable. You know, we've all been around for a long time and go to training. Some training is a bit of a sugar high and that's great. You walk out feeling great and pumped up. But if there's not a meaningful action afterwards that you implement, you've had a great time and you've had a sugar, but nothing will change. So I liked that his way in which he delivers his content, but also holds you to account to make those changes in your life.
Yeah, amazing. So you've been in real estate for quite some time, for nearly 30 years, I think I'd calculated if my notes are correct. But you've also had a diverse career. So you were an agent and then you joined the corporate franchise world. So tell us a little bit about some of the key milestones and experiences on your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually started in 1993. So that's 31 years this year.
Oh,
a long time ago, before technology, before realestate.com and the internet, all of that kind of stuff. As most people, I started as a receptionist and held every position in an agency since. that office that I started as a young receptionist, I owned that 3 years later. I married into a real estate family who had 5 offices and owned part of a franchise group. So I was very fortunate at a young age to be exposed to leadership and scale. And I'm always very, very grateful for that and the beautiful mentors that I had around me. I come from a place of yes, sometimes to my own detriment. I say yes to things I have no right to say yes to. So in 2000, when I was asked to co-author an affordable housing study for Parramatta Council, now I'm a teenage mum who grew up on the wrong side of the tracks who never finished high school. And I'm going to write a white paper. I had no business in doing it, only that someone thought I could do it and had faith in me to do it. So I just knuckled down, surrounded myself with good people, did the work, and you know, I was really proud of that. That work on affordable housing opened up a whole new world to me in real estate from mainstream and then steered me into that community housing space, of which I did a 5-year stint there, including being a tenancy advocate, which I do know a lot of property managers jump back at me when I say that. But I did approach it from an industry perspective of how we could bridge the gap. I don't get the us and them. I think even with the regulator, with our regulators and all of that, we all have this common goal. So it's how we meet in the middle to achieve those outcomes. So it was really great work in that space, had my own specialized property management business later on. And then, yeah, about 10 years ago, I found myself in the corporate space, which I've really enjoyed. And I've stayed there ever since. And I think for me, as I've gotten older, that power of purpose comes with both the vitality of youth and about me. I want to win the awards. I want to prove something. I want it to be about me. And as you get older and have more experience, it's about helping other people achieve that and the appreciation and the fulfillment that you get from that. And corporate delivers that to me in spades. And I really feel grateful and humbled that I get to work in that space and help other people achieve their goals.
Yeah, amazing. Now, this wasn't my next question, but I've been known to meander down different roads. Like, I'm interested. I love the fact that you jumped into the affordable housing study and bit off more than you could chew and just chewed, because I sort of know a few people that have done that and done it well. But I guess affordable housing is a big topic at the moment. What are your thoughts on a way forward? I'm not even going to say a way out, because it took us 30 or 40 years to get here. But what do you think is a way forward?
I think the sad thing is that some of the recommendations that we made almost, 24 years ago now, still haven't been acted upon. So we did have a crystal ball into the future. It was tough back then. I remember buying my first house at about 19 years old, which was $123,000. And I was probably earning about $40,000 a year back then. So if you think about affordability to purchase price to what I was earning, to what it is now. And that was getting worse and worse. So looking at that density, I've always been a fan of urban consolidation. I think we push the green belt, especially in New South Wales, we keep pushing people out to areas where in modern times they didn't actually have sewer. They were still early 2000, 2010 on pump out, which is very expensive, where we had all this historical grid town planning on big quarter acre blocks, where there was infrastructure, there was train lines, there were schools, where we could have done urban consolidation. That was kind of a dirty word. Like, when I was talking about that all those years ago, there's a lot of walls up with that. Now, obviously that has changed and we see the advancement in granny flats and all of those dual occupancies. But there's a big role to play in this, and it's across all sections of government. And I work closely with the government. I don't think there's an appetite at all of those levels for them to jump in and do it. While we remain at 91% of rental properties are provided by private investors in this country or thereabouts, we're doing the heavy lifting as private investors. So there's huge challenges, and I, like many people, don't have a solution. I've got great mates in the industry, Leanne Pilkington and I talk about this a lot. I agree with her that the first home buyers grant should be available to first home buyers that want to own investment properties. I think if my own children living at home, Lockie, 28, has a good job, if he wanted to invest in a rental property and provide housing and provide affordable housing, why couldn't he get that first home buyers grant to do that and, you know, put some caveats around it? So tax breaks and things, that's complicated. We have to change legislation. That negative gearing conversation comes up every election time and all those different things. It all comes back to supply, and with huge challenges around supply. I do like this build to rent. I do think we have to understand that Australians and accept will be long-term renters and are looking for different ways to invest in property. I believe in being rent investors, owning in affordable areas. I was a regional rep for 7 years, really great buying out there, and paying rent where you want to live. But also, maybe we have to change our tune on the great Australian dream was always owning a home. Maybe that has changed as well. So, look, I personally don't, the problem is too big, but we can't say it's too big to solve. We have to, like that, chew away at it one little bit at a time, a small change of policy here to look to affect overall change, because I worry about my own children, but more importantly, their children, that next generation.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, everything is a test until it isn't. And some kind of action sort of creates momentum rather than taking no action. And I guess it's the same old story just in real estate as well. Unless you actually sort of take action on the things that you learn and try some new things, then you're going to end up sort of in the same place as you were.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, good old bank of mum and dad. My kids always laugh that I was a young mum. And they're like, we're never going to inherit anything. We'll be in the nursing home with you. You know, you're like 20, you'll be 90, we'll be 70. So my kids, even though they think they get a mum for much longer in their life because I was so young, they also feel very ripped off with the inheritance because, you know, we'll be right there together.
Yeah. So speaking of mum, let's talk about Lockie for a moment, because I know that this is probably very fresh on your mind as this trip from this record-breaking run from Brisbane to Sydney. Like, I can't even imagine running that far. I can't even imagine driving that far, actually. But it was for mental health awareness. Incredible achievement. Congratulations to you both. First of all, how has the journey with Lockie impacted you both personally and professionally?
Someone said this to me once and it really resonated about a moment in my life. And I looked to Lachlan and I said the same thing. And I said, this changes everything and I can't wait. It does. We just see the world through a different lens now. We've had this amazing experience as a family and as the group, the Motley crew that went along with him. The conversations that we had with people along the way, asking us what we're doing, sharing their own stories, which were deeply personal and tough, to have those conversations and the hugs and the tears and just understanding, so important to remove this stigma. And I know we're doing a really good job of it, but be mindful that sometimes the people with the biggest smile on their face are hiding some really deep sorrow. I even think of myself, I look back to last year where I finally graduated and got my master's degree and there's this big photo of me smiling, accepting my degree. That day I was absolutely riddled with grief, isolation, despair. I was going through so much. And yet when you look at that picture, I look back in that picture and feel like such a fraud because I'm beaming from ear to ear. But how I felt was really different. Really proud of what Lachlan achieved, just watching the physical strength, but the mindset to get up and run 90 something kilometers every single day with a broken body, broken from day one, but be so determined to want to do that, to make a difference. It was just extraordinary. I'm grasping for better words to describe the experience. It was tough watching our child suffer. We had two fairly major medical emergencies. A couple of times as a parent, I had to make some calls, you know, with his pain relief and things like that to give him way over the recommended dose of Voltaren. I went out to actually my real estate community, other elite athletes, and like, this is happening. And they're like, no doctor will recommend this, but you need to do this, 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 and this. And I'm not going to ask anyone else on the team to make that call. That's a parent call, because if that didn't work, there could be, you know, medical emergency or challenges around that. So having really open conversations around that. Yeah, he's so determined. He just said he was going to do it. He trained for it. He put good people around him the best he could. He did the hard work and then he got out there and did it. And to me, there's so many correlations to that, to the top agents in real estate. You think of that story and you think of the people that are really at the top of their game in real estate, often from setbacks in life, from challenges, there's a pivotal moment where they choose to change and then they just do that hard work.
Yeah. It's funny, like you just reminded me of something that a lot of people, they want the reward at the end, but they don't want to do the work to get to the reward. Obviously, you just said that Lockie's body was broken. He was in an incredible amount of pain. Is that where your brain just takes over and just, you know, wants it more than your body's resisting it.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we witnessed happening. His why was so much bigger than why not that the body was saying. So his mindset, when you were running with him and having conversations with him during the day, it's just so powerful, so determined. And that's why he ended up going into severe shock twice, one way worse than the other, because his mind was in control. And then he stops for the day and he sort of had a hard stop that day. It was a late night and then the pain kicks in. The mind relaxed for a moment and then all that pain kicked into his body and his body's like, well, we're shutting this down. We're just going to shut it down. It's a really scary moment. It was a moment as a mother, I had to realize right then that I could add no value to that situation. It was the hardest thing for me to walk away from, but leave him in the hands of the medical experts that we had with us. To then they had to jump in and take care of him. And I had to step away because it was incredibly confronting. And I just wouldn't have been able to help in that situation. He was so apologetic. He's like, Mom and Dad, I'm so sorry to have put you through this. I'm so sorry that you have to see this. And it gets me even quite emotional going back to it now. I think we probably all will have some PTSD at some point from that. And then to see how he would then get through that, be okay, be fed, be physioed, get to sleep, and then get up the next morning laughing and whatever, ready to go and do it all over again.
Yeah. So what are your big takeaways from it? I know you wrote an article called How Running and Real Estate Are Connected, because I want to draw on a couple of your articles that you've written for us. What are your big takeaways? Like, what are some of the things that you'll go back to time and time again as lessons from the experience?
Absolutely. I mean, to that article, some of you, I want to put it on the table that I am by no means a runner. I started running this year. Lachlan bought me running shoes 2 years ago. And embarrassingly, they'd to match his running shoes. They'd sat in the box in my cupboard. And I was like, man, my child's about to embark on this epic adventure. I want to be able to be by his side for some of it, obviously not run the whole 1,000 Ks. So one day I just got up and put those joggers on and went for a run, having never done it before, and then just kept doing it. And so I'm only a 4K a day runner, nothing hectic, but just wanted to get into that momentum. But I've been doing it for a while now. When I wrote that article and I used the Nike Run Club app, which has AI in it and taps into my thoughts and feelings, and I was, 4 months in. So of course I'm an expert, right? I'm a 4 month in runner. I should be fantastic at this. And I see lots of young agents thinking that as well. I've been working really hard for 4 months. Why aren't I writing $1 million? Well, I was basically having the same conversation with myself as a runner. So I'm slogging it out through my first K. Puffing so much, I think I'm just going to drop down on the spot. And I'm beating myself up saying, I should be excellent at this. Gosh, I'm a runner. I do this all the time. Why is this first K so hard for me? And then you control your breathing and you get into your run. But the whole 4Ks or that day, I beat myself up the whole time. Why isn't it easier? It should be easier. All I wanted it to be was easier. And I stopped my run, I stopped my app, and it's like, hey, Coach Kelly from Nike Run Club LA here. Just remember, Kat, it doesn't get easier. You get better. And I'm like, wow, yeah, don't want it to be easy. Wish you were better at it. And I think that's a parallel for real estate as well. Do the work. You have to get better. Focus on being better. What do you need to do? If that is your goal to be better at that, what do you need to put in place? And that's all Lachlan did. Also incremental. It's like the elephant eating it a little piece at a time. When you get up and you go, oh my God, over the next 10 or so days, I'm going to run nearly 1,000 kilometers. It just seems insurmountable. So we just broke it down to 10 Ks at a time. His crew, we saw him every 10 Ks. So you're going to run from here to here. Then we're going to crew you. We're going to refuel you. We're going to have great conversation. Someone might jump in with you. We just broke those days down to 10 Ks at a time and perfected that, moved on to the next one, regrouped where we had to. We had lots of rules, not rules, but mindset was really important for all of us. So when things went wrong and they did, no blame game. We had to move past it really quickly. And I think we can get bogged down that in real estate, wanting to be right and pointing the finger. Things go wrong in life all the time. Learn from it. Don't do it again. Shift yourself from that mental space really quickly, because we couldn't for 1 second. Like, stuff definitely went on with the crew. There were some really high stress moments. Lockie and I have had conversations after the run. He's like, I would never have known that, because we have to say our piece. And I think say your piece if you feel strongly about something, but move on. Don't hold on to it. I think that's some of the key lessons. And having coached real estate agents for many years myself, I do see people holding on to things for the principle. And I get it. But as Dr. Phil once said many years ago when I was at home sick, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because sometimes you can't be both.
Yeah, we could definitely unpack that one for sure. That's a really good one. It occurs to me too, there's another parallel there. I trained for a fun run last year. Everyone knows I'm a Peloton nut. And something I only just really realized, I think, and it's only that you just mentioned it there, is that when I started running from beginner, I wanted to run as fast as the instructors were telling me to run, whereas it wasn't really possible. And it wasn't until like I sort of worked out what my zone two, zone three was from what my best was that I actually started making progress, because I didn't hate getting on the treadmill so much. I didn't hate going outside for a run that much. That probably happens a lot in real estate too, where people listen to the coaches and try to run at 6 miles an hour when they're just not ready for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get that as well, because progress in running or in real estate is not linear. You will go backwards sometimes. You'll perfect something. That deal will go really well. Then that one absolutely falls to rubbish. And you're like, I don't understand that. And that's the same with me. There's been days that I've gotten up and I feel like absolute, you know, I don't feel great. And I have a really fast run. It doesn't feel like a, like, and I'm by no means a fast runner. And other days I slog it out and I'm like, I'm so slow today. But you know what? I still did it. Why am I putting so much emphasis on the time? The point is that I got out and did it. And if Lachlan didn't focus on the record at all, he did set out to break the record, but we actually didn't speak about the record until the last day. And we're like, oh, I think we're 24 hours ahead of the record. Because if he didn't finish, the record meant nothing. So we were only focused on finishing and getting him to Sydney, even if that meant us walking the whole way with him. At one point, his body was so broken, that's the only way we thought we'd get him home. So I think that's important as well. And I know it's really, we encourage people to set goals and things like that. What I would say to our industry is we do recognize and award on gross GCI, which is fantastic. I can't tell you though how many people that I've worked with that might be up on stage getting an award that aren't making any profit in their business. I believe that is a goal, GCI for sure. But have beautiful goals about enriching your life. I'd much rather one of my top agents be able to go on that holiday with their family, make the money to have the memories and the moments, then slug it out for one or two. I guess it's more that holistic approach as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of coaching, so you've written quite a few other articles for us, and I think we've covered the running one. But in a lot of them, you talk about the importance of human connection in the digital era. So how are you and Harcourt's working on striking a balance between leveraging the tech but maintaining the personal touch?
Yeah, that's really important to me. And you probably notice in my writing a lot, I use this phrase, the extraordinary application of the mundane. It's the little things that matter to people the most, whether it ticks them off. You go into an office and you say, what ticks you off? Cheryl leaving the tea bags in the sink. You know, we're really focused on that. But it's also the little things, like recognizing little things that are important to people and understanding that. So for me, being able to be across the little things that matter to my people, we need to use technology to give the prompts to me to be able to manage that and have all the reminders and all of that. But it's me that needs to pick up the phone and have those conversations and the acknowledgement. You don't want that going out as an automated message. For example, everyone in my network gets a birthday message sent. That is a personal email that comes from me. I do that. Obviously, we use some technology to give me that reminder, but I check that and I send that. Whether that's Christmas Day, I'm on holidays, people's birthdays don't stop because my job stops. So delivering that finest experience, which we try and achieve always at Harcourts, people have got expressed wants and needs and unexpressed. So really, if you have to know your people, you have to get in there and know your people to be able to meet that. And tech's not going to be able to do that. So I definitely think automating processes and streamlining for efficiencies, throw all the best tech at the world for that. I love that. So that can free me time up for the relationships. My job is to know my network, to know what they're going through, to be right there by their side through thick and thin and support them. So the more time that I have to do that in the field, the better. So that's where we try and have that convergence of technology and the human connection and really focus on that where possible.
Yeah. And there was one of my other favorites of yours too. I love how you make the connections between the non-obvious, and you wrote this article about what we can learn from Married at First Sight. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the show, but I will guiltily admit to dipping in and out of it. Tell us how you made that connection and what that was about.
Well, I put Mike at 5 for this. I'm going to name it shame. So I wasn't a maths fan either, but I'll tell you who is, just quietly, no one's going to tell, is Mike Green. Mike Green.
No.
There's a scoop for you.
Wow.
So there may or may not even be a group chat, a Harcourt's group chat around that. So he added me. We were at a retreat and I said, oh, look, I've never watched it. And he's like, well, I'm going to add you to the group chat. So there was so much buzz around the group chat and this commentary going back and forth. And obviously they're in Queensland and with daylight savings, I would get an advanced viewing. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to get into this. And then what are the parallels in real life? And I just found it really interesting. Some of the relationships and the different characters at play in Married at First Sight really reminded me of some of our beautiful real estate community. So it was a little tongue in cheek, but there was some messages around there as well. And definitely hoping that might get a bit of a chuckle out of it as well, me jumping on the NAFS bandwagon there.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right. And if not people in the real estate community, definitely customers. They're all people we've met.
Yes, they are. And understanding that. And look, there are really fascinating nuances of those relationships and the interplays. And when you can put that aside, I try and view the world like that. I know I wrote an article about Sex and the City as well, and talking about how they had to deal with that difficult situation of writing out a favorite character because he actually passed away in real life. And that's always tough. And people jump on the internet and have big opinions about that, whether they got it right or not, the writers. But what I loved was the main central theme of that episode was letting go of things that no longer serve as purpose. And boy, haven't we all held on to stuff that we haven't needed to right here. And it's not healthy for you on so many different levels. And I'm guilty of it myself. And so I really wanted to dive into that a little bit and have that conversation out there in that world and with my clients as well, because sometimes we hold ourselves back by literally holding on to stuff that's not serving us any purpose or how we feel about things. And I've had to do a lot of work around some different things, and there's definitely a messy middle when you're right in the thick of it. But when you come out of the end and you start viewing things and you just let things go, such a beautiful release. You become such a more deeply abundant person, and beautiful people come into your life because of it as well. So it's important to me. I think sometimes when you write really dry articles, because I do love academic writing as well, but just not catchy enough to get people's attention. So it's like, how can I draw the correlation between these two? Because if you're a Sex and the City fan, you're a Sex and the City fan. I'm a diehard fan, and I thought it might just, again, strike a chord.
Yeah, you don't need to explain to me. I wrote an article on Top Gun, so
yeah,
you don't need to explain to me at all. So you and I are going to be at another event together in the next month, which is a PropTech event. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're going to be delivering there?
Yeah, so I'm sitting on a panel for that, and I was really chuffed to be asked. I would like to put it out there for all the beautiful PropTech people. I don't see myself as an expert in prop tech at all. I'm probably an end user or sit on the other side of it and spend time talking to our officers about it. But I think the panel is key innovations to today's real estate trends and expectations. So, yeah, how can we use tech to solve some of those challenges that we have in real estate today? And, you know, we touched on a few of them. We have multitude of opportunities there. Getting back to solving the rental crisis or looking at the specific wants and needs of tenants in a modern world, using predictive analysis to really understand that from a maintenance perspective. How do we get ahead of that? Think of the bugbears in rental, in tenancy. It's communication, it's maintenance not being done, it's not meeting people's expectations and what they believe they want. If we can use predictive analysis to solve that and get ahead of all of that, it changes our relationships. And we need to change those relationships because they're going to be long term. I was at a forum about tenancy, and there were some conversations with the regulator, tenants unions, different people around that. And I said, guys, I'm here because they're really important to us. They're our clients. Again, it's not an us and them situation, and I don't want to view that. We want to make sure as an industry that we're stepping up, and especially this next generation are wanting ethical properties. They're looking for smart home solutions. what does all that look like? So tech plays a huge role in all of that. Outside of the traditional, how we're using tech just to streamline efficiencies around how you can report things in property management, I think there's a big evolution piece around what that whole experience will be like.
I've been thinking that myself for a number of years, actually, that we've had the Internet of Things for quite some time. So if, as you said, that the things on the Internet of Things, if that makes sense, could tell you when they're about to break down, before they break down, then you don't have to get into that conflicty kind of situation with a tenant. Like, you know, I think that the air conditioner behind me is probably about to break down, but it'd be really nice if my property manager could call me before it breaks down to say something like, that air conditioner in your studio is going to break down in about 2 months' time. So I'm going to notify the owner and we'll try and get it replaced before it does, or something like that.
Move into that terms. If we predict it, and you know, predictions aren't always accurate, but we can manage those expectations of our investors as well to say, your property is at blah age, your appliance are at this age. So the likelihood of maintenance, replacement and things. So let's do a stepped summary of that and what that kind of costing could look like. And we can factor that in. You can have that all a strategy and pre-planned around that. So they understand that over the next 3 years, they will be looking at, based on quantity survey or, you know, whatever, that they'll be replacing these appliances at approximately these kind of costings. And so we just eliminate the friction point.
Yeah, well, that's it. Then they can budget for it and you could sort of have the depreciation almost doing, I guess, an investment P&L or helping them. It could be a value-added service.
Well, absolutely. And I think we need to look at that. And obviously smart home technology is a huge thing. I do think tech and that ethical space is really interesting as well. I look at my own children who are that smack bang in that millennial sort of age group, and what's important to them is very different. They invest, like they want their super in ethical super funds. They will do business. So, you know, again, looking at tech with businesses, they're happy to pay a little bit more to do business with ethical businesses that have really clear policies around different things, which not all about tech, but I think we have a long way to go in the real estate space around CSR and all of that kind of stuff as well. But our clients are demanding this of us. So it's not like, no, a nice to have. This is a must to have. And so it's about understanding it. And I can appreciate, and I imagine you know, we had this conversation earlier, the agents that you talk to, they have so much coming at them. There's this product, there's that product. And they sometimes don't know where to start and where to stop. But I would say we do a lot of work around sings, hums and clunks. What shines in your business and you're renowned for and everyone knows you do it really well. What's your standard operating procedures that are just humming along and you could refine? Where are the clunks? If you have clunks in your business and every business does, what's the human element to that? What tech could solve that clunk? And I think starting from there would be a really great strategy for any of our real estate friends out there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that word clunk too. It's like, what do they call it? Onomatopoeia. Like I was just thinking of a couple of my own clunks. Yeah. So I may take that one away.
And we all have them and we ignore them. You know what I mean? Like you just kind of, it's clunky, but you know.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it's been awesome to catch up with you on the podcast finally. And I'd like to thank you for coming and sharing some of your ideas and your knowledge and also yours and Lockie's incredible story, because it's not too often in the real estate industry that we hear of something that big, that amazing. So congratulations to you on that as well.
Thank you.
If there was one thing or one piece of advice that you'd like to leave everyone with for today, what would it be?
And so I'm going to use the same, I think I use this at Christmas time, but it's something that's important to me and I remind my network of it as well. It's a little bit long. Can I have two? Because one is Lachlan's, maybe.
You can have two. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Being greedy here. So just from a human element, I want to remind people that there will be beautiful moments on disappointing days and disappointing moments on beautiful days. Just remember to be human. It's about living through those seconds, those minutes, those hours. But being supported is having someone to hold you through them. So think about who that support system is. And the other thing I'd like to add is that my very wise child, who is my teacher, said to me in a really tough time last year when I was struggling and I thought, how do I get up and be a leader? Look, I've perfected the brave face. I can put the smile on, but deep down I'm in turmoil and I felt such a fraud getting up and being a leader. And he said, Mum, you have to remember, being strong doesn't mean you don't feel pain. Being strong means you're willing to put yourself in a situation even though you know you're going to feel everything. And that's what he did on his run. And that's what I'll continue to do, because if I do that, I believe I'll be a better leader.
Incredible and so inspirational. Katrina Tarrant, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast, with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.